It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
Off and rolling on a Wednesday, September 4th, 2024 is the date, and I want to welcome you in. I want to welcome you into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman, Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, how's it going?
It's going.
I hear you. Now, we have 3 hours of talking the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. And I think you know what we're going to discuss off the top of the show. 4 staffers on Penny Hardaway's Memphis basketball staff have been let go. That is the news of the day. We're going to try to make sense of it. It's hard to make sense of it. We're right here on the precipice, 2 months from the season, and now you don't really have a staff that is fully put together. Strange. Something's going on, but we'll talk through it. There's no doubt about it. But as far as everything else, 4:30, we'll have Colton Denning, Two-Stripe CPD, talk about his week one reactions to college football, get into week two. 5 o'clock, David Cobb from CBS Sports. We'll talk a little college football, but we're definitely going to talk about Penny Hardaway. He ended up doing the write-up for CBS Sports on what has happened here in Memphis, but we'll get his reaction to it as well. And then 6 o'clock, I can't think of anybody more in the know than Jason Munns, the commercial appeal, the beat writer for the Tiger basketball program. We will talk to him at 6 o'clock. And I'm not going to mince any words. I'm just going to ask him straight-up questions. And I want some pretty solid answers from Jason, and I know he can provide those. But that is what the show is going to look like. We'll also talk about Ja'Marr Chase getting back to Bengals practice. We have more contracts that have been doled out on the NFL level. G.G. Jackson, we have an update on his injury, but... let's go ahead and get into it. 4 members of Penny Hardaway's coaching staff, Demetrius Dyson, Jamie Rosser, Faraji Phillips, and get this, Rick Stansberry, have been let go. They're no longer with the program. There's some thought about Jermaine Johnson. We'll see how that all plays out. I want to read these statements that have been put out. One from Ed Scott, kind of an anti-statement, and the original statement from Penny Hardaway. This is what Penny Hardaway had to say about all these staffers being let go. I want to thank Rick, Faraji, Jamie, and Demetrius for their service to the University of Memphis and our basketball program. These are good coaches, and I've worked with them closely over the past few seasons. But I made the difficult decision to go in a new direction with our staff. The timing is not ideal, but I want to give this team the best opportunity to reach our goals of winning the American Conference and advancing to the NCAA tournament. With the season rapidly approaching, we're going to move quickly to complete the staff. You have to move quickly. There's no doubt about it. And then Tim Buckley from the Daily Memphian reached out to Ed Scott, the new AD over at the University of Memphis, to sort of ask him and see if he could weigh in on Penny Hardaway's sweeping changes of the staff. And he said, I have no comment on that. Penny put out his statement, and I'll address it if and when necessary. But no, I have no further comment on that, which is relatively strange. Now, if you're looking at what has happened this offseason, I thought it was a really quiet offseason up until the last couple of weeks, but there's been a rumor swirling about the staff changes and what could happen. But when you just sort of put into perspective the staff changes this offseason, Faraji Phillips, Jamie Rosser, Andy Borman, Darby Rich, Garrett Kelly, Andy Pennington, Jeremy Kipnis, Demetrius Dyson, Rick Stansberry, that is 9 coaches. 9 coaches that have, or nine staffers, I should say, not all coaches, nine staffers that are no longer with the program that were with the program heading into the offseason. Now, something's clearly going on. You can try to ignore it all you want. Something is going on behind the scenes. It's September, and four coaches all at once have been let go. There's certainly an explanation, but from where we sit, we can only do some informed speculation on what has happened here. Now, I want to start by saying there's one thing that you positively cannot ignore, and that is the new AD at the University of Memphis, Ed Scott. Ed Scott, first day was late July. 6 weeks later, you have four staffers leaving the program. When a new AD comes in and assesses the situation, he can give his advice to a coach. And I'm certain, very certain, he gave some advice to Penny Hardaway. Now, Penny can heed that advice or he can ignore that advice. Seems like, based on the changes we see, that he heeded that advice. Now, what are a couple of things that could go into that if you're Ed Scott, the AD? Ed Scott probably looked at the situation, and there's two things. One, I think they're overextended in their staff. They had a massive staff, just way too big. And you have to cut some people out that may make a little bit too much money for what they're being asked to do. For example, Jamie Rosser. Jamie Rosser was a guy, I believe he is the godfather of Curtis Givens. Curtis Givens ends up committing to LSU, and I feel like there was some connection there that maybe that you thought you could get Curtis Givens to campus, and he doesn't get to campus, so you ask, okay, so what is his role behind the scenes? But there's a lot of guys like that on staff. You have to start questioning, okay, you're paying them this amount of money. What exactly is going on? And if you have been reading the reports about Nolan Smith, the former Louisville assistant coach, former Dukie, you have been seeing maybe they didn't have enough money to go hire him, and that's what's been holding up the hiring process. So Ed Scott probably looked at it and said, you're way too overextended. We have too many guys on payroll, and the coaches that you actually want can't get hired because we don't have the budget to bring them in. So that's the first thing I think Ed Scott, when he took over in late July, saw and came to Penny Hardaway and said, dude, you want these coaches, but we don't have the budget to bring them in. The other part of this that this is a little more speculatory on my part. I will completely preface my thoughts by saying that. I think when you look at Penny Hardaway, the relationships he had with Demetrius Dyson and Jamie Rosser and Faraji Phillips, and even Jermaine Johnson, who was rumored, and we'll get to this in a second, he was rumored to be out, but it looks like he may be in, still up in the air. Penny has a lot of guys that are just his straight-up friends, right? Like, there's no hiding that. These are guys that have been around him for a while. He has previous relationships with them, tends to love them. They love him back. I bet Ed Scott looked at it and said, listen, we're trying to run a high-level program here, and at some point you have to bring in people that can buck against the trends that you're trying to set, that can get you right in moments of need, like last year when you were 15-2 and you completely saw this team disintegrate into nothing, weren't even close to making the NCAA tournament. I feel like there's moments, inflection points, where you need to have people on staff that can help correct some of the things that are coming from the top. And a lot of these guys, Demetrius Dyson, Jamie Rosser, Faraji Phillips, Jermaine Johnson, who we'll see if he's on staff. I still want to preface by saying that. I think you could term them, in a way, as yes men. That's sort of what Penny has surrounded himself with the past few years. And if I'm Ed Scott and I'm looking at that, I would say that's not necessarily how a high-level program runs. You need to have more guys doing more teaching on floor that have defined roles that are not just going to back up every decision you make. So I think the first thing we have to understand about this situation is that clearly something's going on, and I think Ed Scott is probably here at the top making suggestions to Penny Hardaway. And if you read through, again, his statement today, I have no comment on that. Penny put out a statement, and I'll address it if and when it is necessary. I think Ed Scott understands that he had something to do with it, and he will address it if he needs to. Now, the other truths about this, I think when we look at this offseason, we look at the way the roster's put together, we look at the coaching staff and how that has been put together. I have a statement I'm going to say. It'll rub people the wrong way. And usually we do overreaction, not an overreaction, but I'm trying to give you measured reaction on what I have heard and what I have seen and what has happened the past 24 hours with this team. I think the continuity problem that we have seen rear its ugly head through 6 years of Penny Hardaway, I don't think it's going away as long as Penny Hardaway is the head coach of the University of Memphis. Now, I hope that Penny Hardaway can figure that out and he can have a long, illustrious career at Memphis, get to a Final Four, go win a national championship. I hope those things can happen. But based on past history, that continuity problem is only getting worse. It's not getting better. It's not getting fixed. So for me, if I'm just looking at this situation objectively, the continuity issue is something that Penny Hardaway is not able to fix at this moment, and I don't know if he'll ever be able to fix. We shall see. The other part, the distraction issue that we always talk about. Like I said, this offseason, it almost felt too good to be true for a little bit there, didn't it, Connor? You get all the guys on campus in June and July. You have them all set up. You know, they're all pulling in one direction. You have your staff all figured out. There's been no distractions. It felt too good to be true. But then you get this news and you realize that the distraction problem is still very prevalent. Now, that's something I think Penny Hardaway can fix because I've seen him do it in the past. I saw it in 2022. I saw it with the Kendrick Davis, DeAndre Williams team. You had a staff that was there, comfortable. You had a team that was there and comfortable. And you didn't have distractions throughout the year. You make the NCAA tournament. You had a chance to go beat FAU. Bad call happens. FAU goes to the Final Four. You didn't. Whatever, right? We can do revisionist history, and there's a lot of things. The butterfly effect could have been nuts based on what happened in that particular tournament. And I think a lot of those things still reverberate through that program right now. But when you look at the distraction issue, I've seen Penny Hardaway fix it. He's just got to get a hold on it right this second. Now, for those people out there, and I saw a lot of this, and part of me understands the try, I guess, of making this comparison. We have two basketball teams in town. One's pro, one is college, and we follow both very, very closely. I think we are in a very interesting market in that way, right? Like, previous to the Grizzlies getting into town, all of our stars, all of our attention was focused on a college basketball team. And I think college basketball over the years has gotten more niche, right? Like we have gotten into a point where college basketball is not followed as closely. College football, NFL, everything's taken off. NBA has taken off. So it's fallen back, but not in the city. We latch on to every bit of news like it's the end of times, like it is the last thing we'll ever hear about this particular university and about this basketball program. I completely understand that. But there was the example of Taylor Jenkins and the Grizzlies thrown out there. And there were some people saying, well, he had to completely fix his staff. The people above him, like similar to what it seems like Ed Scott did here with Penny, the people above him, Zach Kleiman, the whole front office, they said, we need to fix this staff. This means too much. We have to make it happen. Now, the reason, and there's a couple of reasons, the main reason that comparison does not hold here is because timing has to mean something. With Taylor Jenkins, what happened? They told him to fix the staff. He got rid of most of the staff. He brought in the staff and the replacement staff in about a month. And it was about a month after the season ended. It was quickly. It was understood. They turned the tire. The tires spun very quickly on it. They made it happen immediately after the season. This is happening in September. Happened on September 3rd and September 4th. We're 2 months out from the season. To not have a full staff this close to the season is not a positive thing. I don't care how you try to spin it. The other part of it that I think is very true when we talk about this comparison is I think it's unfair to Taylor Jenkins and the Grizzlies to even try to make that comparison because Taylor Jenkins doesn't have a history of a revolving door in his staff. That's not how it has worked with him, right? He has had continuity on that staff. He's had the same guys for a while. There's been a couple of coaching switches throughout his tenure. But for the most part, you haven't had this revolving door. Here at the University of Memphis with Penny Hardaway over 6 years, it's been a revolving door. You have not had coaches stay for more than 2 or 3 years at the most. Usually a year stay, usually 9 months, 6 months. It just continues to spin out of control with that basketball staff. So for those two reasons, that comparison is null, but it does not work. And then the other part of this, and I want people to pay attention when they try to make this comparison, I think you're trying to, you know, insulate Penny Hardaway from criticism, because that's what it is, right, Connor? Like, this is an insulation. You're trying to say, well, Taylor Jenkins did it. Why does he get, he doesn't have this visceral reaction? Well, people that are making that type of comparison, I want to warn you against something. You are also the same people that have called for Taylor Jenkins' job. You are also the same people that have said if he doesn't get it right now, he's on the hot seat, they need to find a new coach. I have not heard anyone say that about Penny Hardaway yet. Maybe some first name, bunch of numbers, but the voices that matter in the media, at the commercial appeal here at 92.9, at Sports 50, you don't have a bunch of people consistently calling for Penny Hardaway's job. But you do have that for Taylor Jenkins. So what I would say, when you make this comparison and you try to insulate Penny Hardaway using Taylor Jenkins, make sure you understand what you're saying. Because what you're saying at that point is that Penny Hardaway is in a similar situation where he needs to get this thing right or he could be out of a job. So for all of those reasons, we need to pay attention to this thing, and I think we need to stop insulating. Penny Hardaway can take criticism. That's how this thing works. At the same time, I don't think anybody's called for his job at this point that matter. So this is not a good situation. This is something you're going to continue to have to pay attention to. We'll see who he replaces these guys with. But it is not in any way something you can ignore and, you know, not view in some type of negative light. I'm sorry. I know that I have been accused of being too negative in the past, really in the past year, about Penny Hardaway and this basketball program. But I hate to say it, I get proved relatively right every step of the way. I don't want to be proved right. I think the best thing for this program going into the future is for Penny Hardaway to work out. You don't want to move on. You don't want to turn the page to another guy who's not a legend of the city and who cannot recruit as well. You have to be careful what you wish for once it's past Penny Hardaway. That's why I want Penny Hardaway, and most people want Penny Hardaway to work out. But at the same time, things have to start changing, or we're going to have that conversation. It's frustrating. It's something I don't want to have to discuss, but in the end of the day, I have to look at this objectively, and I can't continue to ignore certain things that happen within that program that just genuinely feel dysfunctional. Now, there's another thing that I do think is worth mentioning. We do have the NCAA investigation. There has been some speculation out there that maybe some of these moves were made to try to insulate themselves from the NCAA investigation, maybe get the people out who know where the bodies are buried or whatever it is. I don't know if I can fully tell you that right now. I can say with pretty solid certainty that was not the reason that these decisions were made. Because if those decisions were made on behalf of, you know, this NCAA investigation coming down, and they wanted to, you know, be able to tell the NCAA, well, we made these decisions because we knew this was coming down the pike, they probably would have done it months ago. But if in the, you know, swing of things, if all these things happen and, you know, it does help you with the NCAA investigation, all the better, all the better. But I got to be honest with you. This is not a good thing. It doesn't make me think that this team cannot accomplish what they set out to accomplish. It does not make me think that in the slightest. But it does make me think that times are getting tough over there for Penny Hardaway and that basketball program, and things have to change now before it's too late.
Pointing out the abnormality of Penny Hardaway's tenure when it comes to coaching turnover and roster turnover does not mean you're calling for his job.
No, not at all.
But we've got to tell the truth. It's not normal. Look across college basketball, even in the era of NIL. It's not normal to have this much turnover. You can recognize that all of that is happening and that it is a distraction and that it has been drama-laden the last few years while still believing that Penny Hardaway at this moment is probably still the best guy for the job.
Yeah.
And while still maintaining some hope that he can get it done. Because like you said, nobody wants a repeat situation of what happened with Larry Finch. Not a single person wants that in this city. Everybody wants Penny Hardaway to work out. But we would not be doing our jobs if we did not point out how abnormal it was. It doesn't mean the sky is falling. It also doesn't mean that everything is sunshine and rainbows. It's somewhere in the middle. I will say, last night when the news broke, my first thought was, come on, man.
Yeah,
I was like, come on.
Course.
Like, we were about to get through an off season. We had 2 more months
with little to no drama.
But little to no drama. We had a little bit pop up last week, but at the end of the day, it wasn't that much. You had some positive thinking that, okay, Nolan Smith was coming in, and this is a good team. I'm excited to see what this basketball
team
looks like.
And I'm still excited about this team and this roster.
Those things can still maintain. And you know, and then when all of the news came out, and then today you got the Rick Stansbury stuff, and it did feel dark there for a moment. And then, listening to people who are smarter than I, reading and finding out some more information just through people that we know, it appears it's not as dire as I thought it was last night. It is not as much of a Penny Hardaway decision and dysfunction as I had previously thought. Like, my initial reaction to it was, man, this stuff just surrounds Penny. It does sound like part of this, though, was Ed Scott coming in and being like, this is a mess.
Yeah.
And there's been no continuity during your entire tenure. So we're going to fix this now, and moving forward, we're going to try to have some version of continuity moving forward. So it means these guys got to go. And listen, there's been no secret that there's been a bit of a rift between Slick Rick and Penny and everybody. So he's got to go too. We're going to clean this thing out. And moving forward, there better not be any drama.
Yeah.
And to your point, listen, if y'all want to go make those Taylor Jenkins comparisons, I find them silly. But understand what you're saying.
Yes.
Jenkins is somebody on the warm seat. We've all agreed. I have said on this station, yes, if he doesn't make it to the second round, he's got to go. So that's the person that you want to compare Penny to? Penny's got to make the tournament this year. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Got to make that tournament. There's been too much drama. There's been too much turnover. I love Penny. Love Penny. But he's got to make that tournament. Because at some point, all this drama, all this dysfunction, it's not worth it. Unless you're making the tournament consistently. We talk about it all the time in college athletics. Some of these players get away with things. Because why? That drama's worth it.
Yes.
Because they're going to run for 200 yards on Saturday.
Yeah, exactly.
You know they're going to run for 200
yes.
yards on Saturday. I don't know that Penny's going to make the tournament every year.
Yes.
I hope he does. I think that he's got a real shot at it this year. But it's got to happen, or some conversations will be had. Nobody's called for his job. Nobody wants to call for his job. But you've got to make this drama worth it.
Yes.
And I'm not sure it's been worth it up to this point.
And I think that's what Ed Scott came in and saw.
Yeah.
He said, listen, there's a lot of dysfunction, and what did that dysfunction lead to last year on the floor? A bad season, a season that unraveled, a lot of dysfunction, a lot more dysfunction, a lot of fans that were, you know, leaving the stands, didn't want to show up for the games. And you have to decide at some point, okay, yeah, it's dysfunctional. And you have the James Wiseman thing that happened. You have the Malcolm Dandridge thing that happened. You've had guys, you know, in and out of the program consistently. You've had all these coaches and this revolving door of coaches. You have to decide if that dysfunction is worth it in the end of the day. And if I'm a AD and I'm a leader of my athletic department, I say, okay, I think the first thing I want to do is try to get rid of this dysfunction. Because the truth of the matter is, whether you want to admit it or not, Penny Hardaway's 6 years. Yeah, they can be. There's been some good times. There's been some solid times. There's been a win against Tennessee. There's been a couple of tournament appearances. There's been a second round game where they almost beat Gonzaga. They you know, we look back at the FAU loss and what could have been and how that all turned out. The Kendrick Davis, DeAndre Williams times were great.
Some super.
But there has always been a cloud of dysfunction over this program
mm-hmm.
since Penny Hardaway has been the coach.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you can't ignore. And if you're a leader, if you're an athletic director that's coming in and trying to make this place his home and is trying to get his athletic department pulling in the right direction, you have to try to, at any point possible, I know this timing is terrible for all these staffers to be let go. At any point possible, though, you have to try to alleviate that dysfunction. I think that's what we're seeing from Ed Scott.
This just seems like one of those situations in which there isn't a single answer as to why these firings happened when they did. It appears to me that it is a list of things,
yes.
And unfortunately, it took until now for it to happen. It is very true that it should have happened before now. That is true. But there was also an AD change when it happened. You can't change that. And we see it throughout sports. When a new person comes in, they usually clean house
yep.
in some sort of way. And this might be Ed Scott's version of doing that, because we can't agree. It was a bit of a mess. We'd all know the rumors. And I think your point about yes men, it's not good. Has it ever worked out? Have we ever seen yes men being around a coach in any sport or player really work out? Is LeBron like the best example of it? And you could even argue that some of the seasons, it's hurt him.
Yeah.
Now, if that's the explanation, if the main explanation is Ed Scott needed to clean it up, I'll buy that. I'll buy it because I want to buy it.
Yeah.
I want to. I really want to, because it takes some of the blame off of Penny. That being said, some of it still exists with Penny. But that's what I mean. This is a laundry list of things that caused these moves to happen right now. It's not, there's not a smoking gun. It's not the NCAA.
There's one.
It's not just Penny.
Yes.
It's not just a rift between him and Slick Rick. It's not just the,
I think it's the amalgamation of dysfunction leading to, sweeping change.
And that is why it has taken us 27 minutes now to talk about this situation fully. And that is why, if you're going to talk about it on social media or with your friends or in the Facebook group, which is a mess right now,
of course,
if you're going to talk about this, talk about it truthfully. Just be honest about it. Because you're not calling for Penny's job by being honest. You're not doing a disservice to the city of Memphis by being honest. You can talk about this nuanced situation, this abnormal thing that's happening with the Memphis basketball program, without it having to go to the extremes of a poll.
There is a clear divide.
Because it's not normal. It's okay to say that.
There's a clear divide in how polarized this becomes with Penny Hardaway. It's either you criticize him, or you think, if you criticize him, you think he should be fired. If you don't criticize him, he should be the coach forever and ever and ever. I think there needs to be a healthy amount of criticism. And I think most people of a clear head still maintain that Penny needs to be the guy for this job, for this Tiger basketball program to be successful. I think there is, those two things can exist at the same time and do exist at the same time. And I think that there has been some sight lost of that. I think people have lost sight of the fact that those two thoughts can commingle and can be in one person's mind at the exact same time.
Right. Criticism isn't inherently... It doesn't carry this just, oh, well, you want the guy fired. It's like, no. I want the program to be what I've seen it be in my lifetime.
Right.
More than once. I've seen it have very high highs under Penny Hardaway. And you know when it happened? And the least dramatic season we've had.
Yep.
He had the most continuity that season and the least amount of drama. And guess what? They were
smooth sailing.
One timeout away. One correct call away from maybe making a bit of a run.
From playing Fairleigh Dickinson in the second round and getting to the Sweet 16.
So we've seen it. I know it's possible under Penny Hardaway. But that doesn't mean that I'm just going to sit on my hands and not talk about things that we have to talk about.
Yes. And
it drives me nuts that you can't talk about or criticize or hold it accountable.
Yeah, I do have one sort of, and maybe I'm thinking of this a little bit too cynically, but it's hard for me not to. We did have the Jermaine Johnson news last night, right? Jermaine Johnson, who's been on the staff for a couple of years with Penny Hardaway, he's been on and off with him for a while, and they're good friends. Last night, it was being reported that he was going to be let go with all of these other staffers. So it was going to be five staffers instead of four, and Jermaine Johnson was going to be a part of it. Now, Jermaine Johnson then scheduled on Friday an 11:25 appearance with our good friends Jason and John right here at 92.9. FM ESPN. And as of this morning, Connor, it seems as if Jermaine could potentially be kept on staff. That, to me, I don't want to be a cynic about it. I don't want to just, like, you know, throw stones and cast all these stones and, you know, feel badly about it and think that there's something bad going on behind the scenes. I don't want to be that guy. But that is very curious. You start tying that together. Jermaine Johnson's going to be let go. He schedules something with Jason and John. Now he's not going to be let go. Little bit strange, right? I mean, I'm sorry for being a cynic about it, but that is the truth that I'm going to tell you right now. I feel like there is a correlation between those two things.
At the very least, it just plays into the chaotic nature this program has had the last few seasons. Basically, since Kendrick Davis and DeAndre Williams walked out that door, it has felt like it's been in chaos, which, again, it doesn't mean that it can't relax and have some success. My hope is that today is the this is a bit dramatic for what actually happened, but burn it down and let it grow again. Like, hey, we've cleaned it out, moving forward now. And that's why I do wonder if it is Ed Scott's version of, listen, man, starting now, everything's got to go smooth.
Yes.
All right? And you got to make that tournament, or we're going to have some discussions. But right now, we'll clean slate it for a little bit. But it's got to work. It has to work. Because I can't lie to you. Rick Stansbury not being on that staff, I do think that there's a risk there in recruiting and just in coaching. I understand that Andre Turner is going to be there.
Rick Stansbury did a lot in recruiting this offseason for
that Nolan Smith's coming in. I get it. Those are good coaches. I get it. I understand that those are good coaches. Stansbury was a very good coach, and I think he was very valuable with recruiting, especially in the transfer portal. So it makes me a little – you are taking a risk by him not being on staff, so it better work.
Yep, and final truth from me, and again, something that some people in the listening audience may not like me hearing. May not like to hear me say even. Penny Hardaway in his tenure – has gotten away with a lot more than most coaches could ever get away with in
absolutely
a lifetime. And I understand why. I get it. He is a native-born son. He's a legend, and you want to see it work out. You don't want to have the repeat of the end of Larry Finch and all the, you know, we don't want the celebrity and the legend to turn into, you know, dust, if you will. But at the same time, acknowledge that. Understand that. He has gotten away with a lot more and his tenure than most coaches can get away with in a lifetime. But I'm going to leave it at that. And we're going to come back to this. We're going to talk with David Cobb. We're going to talk with Jason Munns later in the show. But coming up next, let's change the subject. Let's get to some college football. We'll talk about week one, review week one, get into week two with my guy, Colton Denning. Move on to week two as well in college football with Colton Denning on X at Dubsco. And make sure you go subscribe. I'm tired of telling you to do it, but go subscribe to Two Stripes CPD that Colton writes for. Colton, what's happening, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I was locked into that first segment with the Penny Hardaway discussion. That was good stuff. I love listening to sports talk. And from places where I'm not, like, super locked into the scene and whatever's going on, that's very passionate, and that was a great segment.
Oh, why, thank you, sir. Do you care to add to it? Do you care to add to it, Colton? Or do you want to talk some college football? You can add.
I think enough people have gotten fired around Memphis lately, so we can just go to college football.
I got you. Now, I want to start with your Palo Alto experience. You were at the TCU-Stanford game, and I did end up tweeting about it. I guess sickos bring sick things to college football games. But that was one of the grossest games in the history of early season college football. That was nasty. I think, what was it, the first drive, Stanford ended up having a scoring drive, scoring a touchdown, and they had, what, 9 yards of offense? They started on the 25, I believe, because they had a touchback. That was gross. That was very gross.
Yeah, it was ugly football. Me and my girlfriend were talking about it because we were just, you know, chilling up in the second level in one of the end zones. And it was a game that, like, it wasn't even bad enough to where I'll remember it in the next 3 or 4 years. Because right. If you just go to a terrible game, you can at least look back on it and be like, man, remember how much that game sucked? Like, it was just I try not to use this word a ton, but it was just like, it was a mid-game that I will never remember. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, no, I will say this, though. It is kind of funny to see the reaction. Like, if NFL football looks anything like that, everybody says, oh, this game sucks, and they turn the channel. If a college football game looks like that, you basically say, this is what I watch college football for. I love the mistakes. I love the nonsense. Need it in my life. It is funny to see the reaction when a pro team plays like that versus a college football team. Yeah, we tend to lean toward the college football and enjoy it a whole lot more.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that 100%. And you just got to take it for what it is. And even a bad college football game, I still love going to a game in person and feeling that atmosphere and kind of just feeling that vibe. And, you know, Stanford reasonably packed the stands compared to the last time we went to a game a couple of years ago. So it was just nice to be around college football in a live setting again.
100%. Now, you have your 10 takeaways from week one, and your first takeaway, I'm right there with you, and I talked about it yesterday so heavily. Georgia just dismantled Clemson. And your takeaway was Georgia's performance against Clemson reminded you of Nick Saban's best Alabama teams. And it's the closest we are going to get in the near future to those Nick Saban Alabama teams. We'll see what Alabama looks like. I thought they had a really good week one against Western Kentucky. I mean, just absolutely dismantled them. But Georgia, it's just amazing to me. That was their 40th straight regular season win. They're now 17-2 against ranked opponents since 2020. They have beat Clemson 8 of the last 9 times. Kirby Smart does not go into games unprepared. His teams are always prepared and ready to go.
Yeah, and even when it was, 6-0 at halftime, I mean, I don't think unless you were the most optimistic of Clemson fans, you ever really felt like, hey, this is a 6-point game, and I think if Clemson can get a couple things going here, they have a chance to win. Because just like those Bama teams, like I said in the column, what Kirby Smart's teams at their best do is they just drag you out into the deep water, and even if it's a 6-point game, 10-point game, 2-touchdown game late and you're driving, they're going to drag you to the point where you can't swim anymore. And that's exactly what they did with Clemson, because they knew that Clemson wasn't going to be able to hang with them offensively, and they didn't do anything stupid on their side of the ball. They didn't make big mistakes, and they just kind of boa constricted Clemson until they couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, and here's the I saw some interesting conversation around Carson Beck after the game, and he played really well. 23 for 33, 278, few touchdowns. It's funny to see the reaction to how he plays, because I think he's probably the number one quarterback prospect in the 2025 class right now. Shedeur Sanders, Quinn Ewers, all these guys can make their case as the season goes along. But it's kind of funny to see people sort of talk about him the way they do, because they expect this Caleb Williams, Patrick Mahomes type guy now in the NFL to be the number one quarterback taken off the board. He does it boring, but it does show like he just executes at the highest of levels. He is a great quarterback, but people don't necessarily view him in that way because the rest of his team is just so damn good.
People expect every single throw to be like the layered out route,
yeah,
over the corner and zone in between him and the safety, or, you know, down the hash. And it's just, it doesn't work like that. And he can make those throws if we get to crunch time, which Georgia will at some point in the season, and he'll have to do some stuff like that. But it's just stuff you're not going to see every game, or you need to see every single game. And there was no point in Georgia trying to force the ball down the field either.
Yeah, I mean, and they had it. They understood. And honestly, you brought up that 6-0 halftime deficit. A 6-0 halftime deficit against that team feels like a 21-point deficit. If they get up by 2
Absolutely.
Scores, it feels like 50 points when you really can't get anything done offensively.
No, completely agreed.
Yeah, now this is the second week we come in here and we talk about Florida State. What the hell? I mean, seriously, what in the world is going on with them? 28-13, Boston College, ran for 263 yards to Florida State's 21. And then I try to say this, like, I had one of these drives, it's 2014 at Cincinnati. They had Gunnar Kiel, and they had the team that was picked to win the American Athletic Conference in the inaugural year that year. And we went to Cincinnati, we were playing in the pro stadium, and we had an 11-minute drive to end the game, and we had a chance. We were on, like, the 3-yard line, and we had a chance to go score again, and we just decided to knee on the ball, because I think that's the biggest FU in football, to be able to run that 4-minute offense to perfection, to just completely, you know, put your will on the other team. I think that's impressive. To watch Boston freaking College, year one under Bill O'Brien, run 6 minutes and 4 seconds off the clock, strictly running the ball, and then knee the ball in the red zone, it just shows that Florida State is a below-average team. It shows that Florida State was not ready to come into this year and be successful. I hate to put it that way, but that seems to be the truth.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I think what Lewis Riddick was saying at the end of that broadcast, because they were talking about, oh, this is an NFL staff with Bill O'Brien, and college staffs would score a touchdown here, but knowing, you know, where Bill O'Brien comes from, he's just going to take a knee. And Lewis Riddick was like, that's a little bit more disrespectful, because it's almost like when Happy Gilmore gets beat up by Bob Barker in the movie, and he's just like, you had enough? Now you had enough.
Nah,
and that's exactly what it felt like Boston College did. And you look at Florida State's defense in these first two games, 190 yards given up rushing against Georgia Tech, 263 against Boston College, 453 total in two games at over 5 per carry. Like, I know a lot of the heat is on DJU, and he's certainly deserving of that, as is Florida State's offense as a whole, because they haven't run the ball well either. But when you're doing stuff like that, and it's when people are saying, hey, this is the best defensive front in the country, you're just not going to win any games against competent teams like that.
Yeah, and I mean this question very sincerely. I'm not even trying to, like, completely, you know, go after Florida State, hurt any Florida State fans' feelings, although we have a guy that needs to eat some dog crap here soon. That's why I love college football. Do they have a redeeming quality? Like, is there a redeeming quality about that team? Any particular position group that you look at and you're like, that is very elite. That is going to be the reason they win ball games this year.
Through 2 weeks, no, because you can't really look at anybody and say, oh, they've played really well. You know, I'm not a guy who's super well-versed on technique or schemes, but it doesn't feel like their linebackers are doing their defensive front any favors. You know, it doesn't feel like their secondary, when they're being tested, isn't doing much to do their part. And then offensively, you look at it just from a whole structural perspective. What are they doing to put their players in positions to succeed? Not a lot. The players on the field, they're not making plays. When DJU is making throws, their guys, whether it's tight ends or wide receivers, are dropping the ball. They can't block. The guys can't hit holes. Like, it's just all one jumbled mess. So if you're Florida State, like, it is the perfect, this is the most a team has ever needed a week to bye week.
Yes.
Like, every team that gets an early bye week, and the fans are always complaining about, oh, like, we had the week two bye. This really sucks. Like, thanks to the schedule makers. No, Florida State, for them, this is the perfect bye week that any team has ever had this early in the season.
Yeah, and they need it. They're going to be playing Memphis here in 2 weeks. Memphis has to deal with Troy this weekend. Can't wait to watch that game, see if Memphis can start running the ball. They didn't do it very well against North Alabama. But the conversation, I'll take you into a conversation we're having here in Memphis on Sports Talk Radio. The backdrop of that game has changed entirely for the University of Memphis. It is not that it's not that free shot against the top 10 team on the road anymore. It is you're playing a below average to below average team, and you're going to be more than expected to win. And you know, losing a game close like that, even though they have an extra week to prepare, that's not going to do you any favors in any committee talks at the end of the year if you do well with the rest of your schedule.
I agree with that, but I will say this isn't on the complete same level, but I'm reminded with this Florida State start of Michigan in 2007 when they lost to Appalachian State, and then they just got absolutely demolished at home the next week against Oregon, and then I think they ripped off like 9 wins, and I'm not saying Florida State is capable of that, but if Florida State were to beat Memphis and then, you know, somehow have a 9-10 win season, run the table, whatever, things can change from the start of the season to the end of the season. But the backdrop has certainly changed, and I think for Memphis, it might actually be good to where now you're in the position of, okay, it's not that it's easy to be the underdog, but it's a little bit easier to get hyped up as, hey, nobody's given us a shot. And in this scenario, you're going to go in with, hey, you're expected to win. And as a team like Memphis, who has those aspirations of making the playoffs and beyond, you're going to have to deal with that at some point. So I think you go into it and you say, you know what? Yeah, we are favored. People do expect us to win this game. Let's see how we handle it. I think if you're the coaches in that Memphis program, you could spin this in a way to be positive, to where, you know, in a lot of situations, it can be just kind of maybe a negative, to where the game is totally shifted and you got to come in with a different mindset.
Yeah, and I will say, I don't know if you saw the opening line, but FanDuel has put it out. 1.5-point favorites Florida State is at home against Memphis. So we'll see how that all plays out. But the state of Florida, you put this in your takeaways as well. Florida and Florida State completely in disarray. It reminds me, though, with the other Florida school in Miami who just hammered Florida 41-17. Cam Ward looks like something they haven't had in a long time at the quarterback position. It reminds me of the early 2000s, right? That state and who it's running through this year has flipped completely.
Yeah, Miami looks great. No matter what people think about Florida and how good or not they're going to be this season, how much of a mess they are right now, to go into your rival's house when it's the Swamp and put down a beat down like that, and not only to just beat them down on that level, But to make Florida quit, because that's what yes. they did at the end of that game, is they quit and they embarrassed them on so many different levels to the point where, and I'm sure you and your listeners who follow college football, have seen, you know, Mario Cristobal breaking the gator over his knee.
That was weird.
the recruiting staffers, you know, trying to get Miami players to stop talking to their kids. Like, in the era of social media now, that stuff matters. Kids see that stuff. And if you're Florida, it's not like you just got punched in the face at home. It's that plus all of these other tertiary things, plus, oh, my God, Miami might really be back. This is really bad news for us in state.
Yes, the recruiting staffer putting all of the recruits in the away section between the two away sections was really ridiculous, though. That was truly dumb.
Not a great move.
Yeah. And then you see, I think her name's Katie Turner. She's like the recruiting strategist that works for, Florida football. She's don't place your hands on the kids from Miami. Don't put your hands on them. That's not a good look. It was all bad for Florida, and it makes me think. And I know you've already made this prediction, but I immediately made this prediction upon getting into studio on Monday. Billy Napier is going to get fired midseason. I don't ever think that a midseason firing is good. It's not. It is a bad thing to do. But based on what is on the way for Florida, there's no way, shape, or form. I just don't believe that they're going to wait till after the season to cut ties with him.
It's a tough hole to climb out of, and, you know, one, they get a little bit of a reprieve this week playing Samford, but I know that Samford has done some damage to teams, and it's not like they're a pushover in their own right just as an FCS school. But in a few weeks they play Texas A&M, and then I think it's a month from now they have to play UCF. You know, God forbid they lose to UCF and you start 0-2 in state. I'm with you. It's just at a point now where it's not only the games themselves, but it's these little moments. It's him being on the podium on Monday and talking about, you know, people in their basements from rural central Florida. It's just not going to get you any sympathy or switch the narrative of how people are talking about you right now. And it's at the point, kind of how I feel with Florida State in their locker room right now, where it's just so much negativity to where how do you get out of it at this point?
Yeah, now, final thing, looking forward to week two. We're going to have the Iowa State-Iowa game. You're going to have Texas versus Michigan. I want to see what Michigan does because I was very surprised Alex Orji didn't run there out there as the starting quarterback. But I need you because you grew up in Boulder. You grew up following this Colorado team. The Colorado-Nebraska game, it feels like it finally has more meaning back into it. And for the better part of the 90s and the early 2000s, it had so much meaning around it. And I know you have a story right now out, and I think you wrote it even last year, about your dad in the 2001 game when Chris Brown ran for roughly, I'm looking at the stats here, 800 yards, and they beat the hell out of Nebraska. That game seems to mean something again to at least a certain extent. Now, I have picked Nebraska. I think Nebraska will win that game. But it is good to see that game meaning something again.
Yeah, and that's how I grew up, and I'll be honest and transparent. There's a hate in my heart for Nebraska football, that program, and its fans that even doesn't exist for me for Michigan as an Ohio State fan, where it's a little bit more, you know, respectful, and you love the rivalry, whereas Colorado-Nebraska, you know, I grew up in it, and there were a ton of Nebraska fans in Boulder, and there was 10 years where CU couldn't beat them, and the 2001 game was kind of the valve where everything just blew up, and CU was able to dominate them in a game that, honestly, they really haven't recovered from. And so CU right now is looking for, I think this would be four straight wins over Nebraska, because you got 2018, 19, and then last season. So I'm really excited to see this game, and it's a big game for both teams, because I do think, despite the fact, and I think this is very weird, that people are just kind of looking at this game and thinking like, oh, Nebraska's going to dominate. They're going to run them over. CU beat them by 20 points last year and pretty yep. thoroughly dominated that game. And I know that Nebraska isn't going to have Jeff Sims at quarterback this time. And we saw what Dylan Raiola did in his first start against UTEP. But I think this will be a close game. And if you're Nebraska, this is a chance to not only get some bragging rights over CU, and I think everybody who isn't a CU fan probably wants to see Nebraska win that game, but it's their chance and Matt Rule's chance to really get that first signature win and say, hey, no, we're for real. We're a different program now.
Now, holler at me, though, real quick. Your dad in 2001, he had a hell of a time at that game, didn't he?
Yes, he did. So we just to keep it short and simple, we always tailgated. My parents had season tickets for like 15, 20 years. And this was, you know, right post 9/11, a couple months after, and my dad had gotten in charge or gotten in touch with an FDNY ladder and was able to help bring them out to Boulder for the game. And they had a bunch of meetings set up that morning with CU Brass, and they were going to go and have an alumni breakfast with the dean. And my dad kind of latched himself on and was able to get a field pass and stay with them. And then when they turned their backs, my dad kind of just led them to our tailgate party. And the tailgate party, and I'll link to it on the site because I did a 2-hour-long podcast with him, is probably the most out-of-control tailgate party we ever had. And so we got all these FDNY firefighters, you know, with us at the tailgate party. And then CU, of course, went 62-36 over the number one team in the country. And my dad's on the field. He ended up, Michael Lewis ended up, he played safety, had an interception in that game, made a couple of, Pro Bowls with the Eagles, but he picked a pass off late in the game and went down the sideline, and they're right in the end zone. And he took it back to like the 2-yard line.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
He drops the ball, and my dad was wearing this big, you know, big old starter jacket. And when nobody's looking because everybody's just going crazy, he takes the ball and just throws it in the starter jacket, and he eventually gave it to one of the head guys at the FDNY, and then we ended up going out to New York a couple times to visit them at their ladder. But that it's such a special day for me, and it's such a special rivalry that I would encourage any, if you want to check it out, go to the site, twostripescpd.com, and I'll link it on my Twitter at Dubsco, because it really is a legendary story. And my dad set himself free that day. Pops was on one.
Yeah, I will say that. Like, stealing a game ball, you usually don't get away with that.
Usually, he got a couple Nebraska fans kicked out of that game, too.
Oh, yeah, I did. I saw that.
Just by being a jerk. So I hate Nebraska. My dad takes it to a whole.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again?
With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.